Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. Brenda Eckwurzel, who is a climate scientist at the Union of Concerned Scientists, where she is leading the Union of Concerned Scientists' climate science education work aimed at strengthening support for strong federal climate legislation and sound U.S. climate policies. Her specialty is isotope geochemistry, a tool she has used to study climate variability in places as disparate as the Arctic Ocean and the desert southwest. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Brenda Eckwurzel.
Thank you so much, and for talking about this important topic.
Well, the president was out here in drought-stricken California on Friday, meeting with Governor Brown and the Secretary of Agriculture and a number of farmers in Fresno, where he talked about the idea of setting up a climate resiliency program of $1 billion in funds to develop new infrastructure to prepare for climate disasters. And this has been met with tremendous skepticism. The Republican congressman who represents Fresno, Representative Devin Nunes, said global warming is nonsense. So how is the president going to convince red state Republican America that the climate events that they're undergoing, the droughts and floods and et cetera, are related to climate change and that they have to get on board the program?
The atmosphere is really nonpartisan where the carbon comes from. It's trapping heat when we release excess carbon into the atmosphere, and it's causing consequences for all of us on the planet. And those of us who are living in parts of the world that are getting excess precipitation and other parts of the world that are suffering a drought, how it expresses itself locally is very important to understand the links with climate change, especially when you're involved with farming. It's very important to understand especially those crops that you have to invest in that take years to produce, like a mature vine in a vineyard or a tree nut, that you have to understand the location and think about 30 years down the road, what is the climate of the region that you're investing in those type of crops that are often very high-value crops.
Well, this proposal of the president's, this climate resiliency funds, follows the passage of the Farm Bill a week ago, in which the White House announced the creation of 7 regional climate hubs, which is supposed to help farmers and rural communities respond to the risks of climate change. Again, the programs are being proposed, but I don't know how you can get traction when you simply can't have a basic agreement about the fundamental facts, you know, of what's happening. When are we ever going to get past this ridiculous impasse between the climate facts and this, you know, this sort of recalcitrant denial that's going on?
It is very perplexing to not take into account the latest available science to make your daily life better if you're a farmer making decisions or a business person trying to decide what type of building you need to build that will take advantage of the energy infrastructure of the future and withstand the assault of extreme weather that may be coming your way, whether you're living near the coast or near in the inland river that may flood from torrential downpours, or if your soil is parched and you're suffering a drought and you're trying to make sure that you're able to survive some of these very extreme conditions. Because at the bottom line, a drought of this magnitude has grave economic consequences for the region and the country and the world. Australia is suffering major droughts, and they look as if there is some major changes because of the climate that are shifting the winds that normally bring relief in rains and storms that come across Australia. That looks like it's going to be a very parched landscape going forward, and that country has to figure out how to be resilient and deal with the changes that are coming ahead. At the same time, there are people that are building wine vineyards that are going other places that aren't traditional wine vineyards.
Well, we also have these ice storms here in the south and in the northeast, and then you've got the flooding in England. So is there any way for lay people, particularly the farmers who are susceptible to global warming denial, to be educated about connecting the dots here? I mean, it's, at some point or other, I don't know whether you noticed the other day that Bill Nye, the science guy, debated this creationist.
Yes, I'm very aware of that.
I'm wondering why the scientific community are being so nice to these purveyors of ignorance.
It's interesting. I think that perhaps those centers that were announced, for example, the Ag Extension Centers, and having people within the community who can convey the latest science about climate change, probably are going to, as people face the risks of climate change, some of it from very wacky weather that is starting to change. And frankly, this is cutting-edge science trying to understand where the rainstorms are going to occur, when it's going to be a blizzard, when it's going to be flood conditions, and when it's going to be parched drought, because they change from year to year where, for example, in the northern hemisphere, where is it going to occur? You're going to need to understand these changes and be prepared for extremes that we really haven't experienced as a people who have really thrived as a civilization on what I would say is very predictable conditions. And we're not going into that world. And we're already in that point right now, but it's really going to get much more unpredictable. And so we need to have the latest science to give us a seasonal outlook, a year outlook, and figure out how what to plant that year or what to do. And the more you deny it, the more you're going to be left behind. And that's something that we want to save everyone from. Even if they aren't aware of the information, let's listen to the experts and learn how to cope better in this new world.
Now, in terms of the people, the fossil fuel companies, of course, are, and preceding you, we were discussing the new study in the journal Science from Stanford, MIT, and the Department of Energy that's finding now that the seepage of methane from this boon in natural gas production, distribution, fracking, etc., is a wash. It's the benefits of natural gas are offset by the destructive climate gas methane, the leakage of that. So having dealt with that before talking with you, Brenda, the question comes up, what do we do about the fossil fuel industry? I mean, they are powerful, they have a lot of money, and they don't seem to be on board with the science. I know companies like insurance companies are suffering. Maybe they could be an ally to counter as a counterbalance. The other thing that's happening is that some cities in this country, Seattle, San Francisco, and Providence, Rhode Island, have divested holdings in fossil fuel companies. Is that a way to go for people in their retirement funds and their mutual funds to divest of fossil fuel companies? I mean, what can be done here? That's my question.
The future, we know enough about the science that the future extraction of fossil fuels has to reflect the externalities of the damages that occur. And it's going to take some very careful thought about how to send such a signal through the whole world economy on how to do that. And the transition, for example, some of the fossil fuels emit less heat-trapping gases than others, and so that has to be taken into account. And as you mentioned, for example, when it's natural gas is methane, and it's combusted for energy, it's released in the atmosphere as carbon dioxide. If these leaks that you're talking about happen, molecule per molecule, even in the distribution systems where you have gasoline infrastructure in a city, the maps, the latest science of the maps of leaking of methane to get it to your home so you can turn on the stove and it's natural gas, those distribution lines are leaking immense amounts and they have to be fixed in our current infrastructure, because when that molecule releases into the atmosphere as methane, it will trap 25 times more heat than a carbon dioxide molecule. The trick is that methane molecule will swirl around trapping extra heat for 10 years, which we don't want, and then it turns into a carbon dioxide molecule with a little reaction that happens in the atmosphere, and it can last for many, many decades. And some of those molecules, maybe 20% of them, can still be trapping heat 800 years from now. So it's very clear we need to start winding down the extraction of fossil fuel and figure out economically how can we send a signal so that that transition is not disruptive to the economy, but at the same time, very strong signal that we start making the transitions away to better energy choices.
Well, Dr. Brenda Eckwessel, I thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. Brenda Eckwessel, who is a climate scientist at the Union of Concerned Scientists, where she's leading the Union of Concerned Scientists' climate science education work aimed at strengthening support for strong federal climate legislation and sound U.S. climate policies. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in the studio with Jeremy Scahill talking about his Academy Award-nominated documentary feature, Dirty Wars.